What's going on, Clippers? It's your guys, William the Opinion Updike.
And Positive Chuck Mockler.
And we are Locked On Clippers, part of the Locked On NBA Network. Ooh. In case you didn't know, we're coming at you 5 days a week with all the freshest Clippers news.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a slow news day today.
Oh, yeah.
So,
we're just kicking back today.
Yeah, we're kind of kicking back. We've got some interesting kind of Clippers conversations to get into. Some great stuff brought up by some guys following us. If you're not following us, by the way, it's at Locked On Clips. We're always curious to know what you think about the show, about the Clippers, about whatever, really.
Get at
you know,
us.
How's your day going?
Yeah, we'll
let
talk,
us know.
We'll talk you through whatever's going on.
But so the first segment we're going to do today is going to be pretty heavily focused on Doc and whether or not the game has passed him by as a coach.
Yeah.
Some interesting things there. We'll be going into a little bit of history, obviously, and just kind of dissecting, you know, where we think he's going with this franchise and,
mm-hmm.
you know, what we think his, you know, pros and cons are. And then in our second segment, it's Wednesday, so we have our regular segment, What Could Have Been Wednesdays, or the Parallel Universe, where we talk about what could have happened if things turned out a little bit differently.
Oh.
Got a pretty fun one today. I mean, not fun.
I don't know if it's fun.
It's interesting. It's not fun at all. But we're going to be talking about what if the Donald Sterling recording never happened.
Yeah.
Obviously, that kind of was a catalyst for a huge change for this team and organization.
Yeah.
So we'll be unpacking that a bit. And then our last segment today is going to be kind of a mini preview and also just some more chat about the Clippers and like a little bit of a taster, if you will.
Nice.
Preview for tomorrow's preview.
It's a soft preview.
It's a soft preview before tomorrow's full preview for the game against the Lakers. Just want to shout out also that we're going to be at Crawford's over in Rampart Village.
Yeah.
If you guys want to roll through watching the game there, we're trying to turn it into a Clippers bar.
Let's overrun that place. They
Clippers
seem
at Crawford's? Yeah. That sounds great. It rolls off the tongue. Anyways, enough about that. Let's get into this episode right about now.
Yeah, so we're talking Doc in this first.
Yeah. So
something we haven't really heavily focused on a lot segment-wise this year.
Yeah, we've talked about it minorly, mainly in game recaps and stuff, and there's like some adjustments and lineups, obviously, we'd like to see. We try not to armchair coach too much.
No, because we don't know enough about specific basketball plays and stuff like that.
Believe it or not, I have never been an NBA coach or a coach at any sort of elite level.
Wait a minute. Stop the pod. So there was a great question brought up on our live stream that we do on every Tuesday on Twitter from Rudy Zavala. His Twitter handle is at RAZ49ers. He asked us, do you guys think the game has passed Doc by? First of all, great question.
Very good question.
We caught it at the end of the live stream, so we couldn't get into it. I don't think the game has passed Doc by at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think we may be seeing perhaps the beginnings of some old ways stubbornness.
Yeah, so I don't know that the game has passed him by in terms of like being a coach and drawing up plays and
100%.
That kind of thing. I think maybe as a management style, the game may have passed him by.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I'll get into that a little bit later as to why I think that. But let's just start off with like a little bit of a background on Doc's coaching career, just in case you're unfamiliar. So his first year in the NBA was the 99-2000 season, coach of the Orlando Magic, who had traded away all their superstars.
kind of
doing an unofficial tank before tanking was really a thing.
Yeah, the pre-tank.
Hoping to get a high draft pick. But he coached the team extremely well. They ended up with a 500 record. Everybody predicted them being the bottom team in the East.
The worst team, yeah.
Yeah, and you know they just narrowly missed a playoff berth. They were known as like the Heart and Hustle Magic because it was a bunch of guys who worked hard, you know, no stars. And I do think that you got to credit Doc for that.
Absolutely. He's a great motivator of the right kind of player.
For the right kind of player, definitely. And we've also seen him do this exact same thing, obviously, with the 17-18 Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's definitely some strong points to his game.
Yeah.
I do think if you know, I think there's always going to be a measure of personalities meshing.
For sure.
On a team.
Definitely.
I think that, you know, there's obviously, you work with these guys 82 nights a week, not counting practices. Not 82 nights a year. Sorry, not in a week.
Damn.
Not counting practices. So I think that beyond just the skill level. There's other elements of it, like any workplace.
Yeah.
That I think inhibit performance. And I don't know if you can credit that directly to Doc. I do think that part of the coach's job is managing personalities and behaviors.
Phil Jackson, a guy who famously not really an X's and O's guy, more of a I'm going to manage all these egos guy.
Exactly. And I think in basketball that becomes even a little bit more important, mm-hmm. because it's not like football or something that's more strictly play driven.
Well, yeah, there's so many specialized jobs in football.
Yeah.
You block.
Yeah.
You run routes. Basketball, with especially how the game is changing, you know, 7-footers are taking 3-pointers. Ben Simmons is a point guard. Like, so many things are changing.
Yeah. So I bring up this point about the heart and hustle magic, just to state that he had his first experience with a big time NBA rookie in the following season, the 2000-2001 season, when they drafted Mike Miller. He was selected 5th overall.
I want to make a note about this. He was the only good draft pick during Doc's tenure at the Magic. If you look at all those other picks.
For sure, but he didn't have GM.
No, that's what I mean. I'm saying, yeah. So that kind of plays into, like, because I'm going to talk about, I think we're both kind of getting to the same point of how he handles youth and good young players.
Definitely.
That's a hard situation when the only good draft pick you have, no disrespect to Mike Miller, fantastic NBA career.
Yeah, but not two rings.
But not a dynamic, game changer, young guy coming right out of into the NBA.
I agree. I think he did end up winning Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
And I think that is partially due to he was a solid scorer. He was like the first, he was the first point guard who was like a 3-point marksman.
Yeah.
So anyways, I do think some credit has to be given to Doc because he was, you know, on a nightly basis helping to draw those plays, mm-hmm. that made that happen, that got him those kind of shots. But I do think there's some level of, obviously he came in with a, I don't want to say his game was finalized as to what it was going to be, but like if you look at his numbers,
it was a finished product. It was close to a finished product.
If you look at his numbers throughout his career, I mean, like there's not like a huge, change, you know.
It's not like roller coaster.
Yeah,
performance.
It's not like he started as like some sort of raw prospect and then you know became something all-star level. So.
It's almost like if you sometimes stay in college for more than 1 year, your game gets better.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So I don't know. You know, I think that, but I do think that development is a part of that. And, you know, he did start with Orlando, I think after, no, I guess he wasn't always starting. So,
yeah. And the other thing, so yeah, he didn't have a lot of talent. He did, I mean, he played, Tracy McGrady was on the Magic teams that Doc coached.
Yeah.
Who is, I mean, probably the most talented, one of the more talented players he's coached. He didn't develop McGrady, though. They got him in a trade.
Yeah.
And then when he went to Boston, the best draft picks in the entire time he was at Boston were Al Jefferson, uh-huh. which is a great draft pick.
Yeah.
Jeff Green, who was drafted 5th in a not very good draft.
Yeah.
And then Gerald Green, you could argue, and then Avery Bradley.
And Rondo.
Yeah, and Rondo, that's true.
why are you saying that like it doesn't count? Oh, and I just want to make one last note on the T-Mac thing. When Tracy McGrady was there, the year that Doc was fired, Tracy McGrady was leading the league in scoring, and I think they lost 11 straight. I think they might have lost 19 straight at one point. So he was pretty unceremoniously fired. But anyways, jumping back to the Boston thing. Sorry to get
No, you're totally fine. And so the Rondo thing is big because he started every game as a rookie.
After his rookie, excuse me.
Yeah. So, like, that's huge. What we're trying to get to is that I think this is the first time in Doc's career he's had this many good young guys mm-hmm. who are contributors kind of already.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, both of these guys were contributors. And the one argument I will make for Doc in the Rondo thing is he was not Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
But he did win. He was in the top for, like, most improved players. He was in mm-hmm. top 5 his second year. So I do think there was some level of development there. And whether that came from Doc actually nurturing him, whether that just came with more time on the floor.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard to parse those things apart.
Yeah. So I guess kind of our thesis is that in terms of young player development, that might be where the game is quote unquote passing him by.
I agree.
Or beginning to prove difficult for him to figure out how to do.
I agree. And once again, I don't think that it's passing him by in terms of X's and O's. But still I do think in terms of management style, if you look at these, like, let's talk about like probably his three most well-known point guards. All right? I'm including Shea in this, and I'm going to say Chris. Well, because, I mean, we don't need to talk about Mike Miller.
Yeah, no, anyway. I told you. gotten your time, Mike Miller.
Rondo and Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And I think that two of those people would butt heads with Doc a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty well documented. I think that he had trouble controlling those personalities.
Because they are, and those are two, one thing those guys have in common, maybe one and two in terms of most intelligent basketball players
Agreed.
We will see in our lifetimes.
Agreed.
So he was kind of spoiled. It's like, I would love to have drafted Rondo and been like, oh, this guy's already a genius at seeing the court.
Yeah.
And then in his first year as a Clippers coach, he has Blake and DJ, who are his first true dynamic young guys paired together. And I think CP3 was so crucial in development because Doc has said, like, CP3 was the kind of guy who wants to be a coach but doesn't want to be a coach.
Yeah.
I think Doc really relied on CP3 to help out young DJ and Blake.
Definitely.
And maybe didn't necessarily give him as much credit as CP3 wanted to get for that.
Yeah, that's fair. And I would say, though, that Doc was pretty instrumental in, like, I mean, especially DeAndre's development.
Oh, yeah, for sure. CP3 helped him so much, I think, in-game style with just, like, be here, you young idiots, I'm assuming is how he talked to him.
Yeah.
But, it's just a weird situation because right now, you know, we don't have a guy like that on the team.
Well, to my point, I think that Shea... So I think that his management style, if we're going to call it that, coaching style,
perfect.
I'm saying like his
I think that's a perfect
player management style has been kind of forged by this certain type of player.
Definitely.
And great point. I don't think that Shea is that kind of player. And I don't mean in terms of play. I mean mentally, like as
he's not
as
get
a
in
leader.
Your face.
He's not that kind of leader. He's a younger guy. I mean, guys respond differently now. Coaches at other levels, you know, high school and college are different now.
Yeah.
And I don't think that his... like management style.
Benching you for an entire quarter.
Yeah, has transitioned into that. I think that he's still in this very specific state of mind, and he's expecting Rondo or he's expecting Chris Paul. And that's just not where Shea is yet.
Yeah.
And beyond that, that's just not his personality.
No, it's not his personality. He isn't blessed with the infinite basketball wisdom that Rondo and CP3 had immediately coming out of college, which is obviously not a knock on Shea. He just doesn't seem like he has that right now.
I disagree with that. I think that he has the vision. I really do. I think that he might not have that sort of leadership.
Hmm.
And I think that that's something that could develop. But he's not a guy who we're going to see, at least for these first couple of years, yelling at guys where to be on the court.
That's
and
fair.
I do think that, you know, I do think that that's fine. If you can be an effective leader without doing that, 100% more power to you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure if he necessarily has. I think he has maybe 40% of the vision of CP3 and Rondo, because those guys were.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's not necessarily... The original question was, do you think the game has passed him by? I think you're right. I think it's maybe management style. He's just kind of part of what is now the quote-unquote old guard.
Yeah.
Of, you know, he's not a Tibbs type, but he's similar to that. You know, he likes to yell.
Definitely.
He benches Shea for an entire quarter. Are we worried that this new style of management is maybe going to hamper Shea's development? Because Shea specifically seems to be the young guy who's getting the brunt of these benching for a whole quarter.
These, we'll call them lessons?
Yeah, exactly. Like getting clearly yelled at,
yeah,
at timeouts.
I do think that it will be a detriment, and I think that it already has been a detriment.
Damn.
I think that we see Shea in games being very tentative after this sort of stuff happens. And, you know, I think that you got to take the good and the bad with a rookie point guard.
Rookie point guards
are not supposed to be good right away. And
yeah,
if you expect them to be, you're kind of an idiot.
Yeah, unless you're drafting, I'm going to say a Trae Young or a Luka. I'm not saying one
but
is better than that ranking. Yeah, they're still struggling.
Yeah.
I mean, except for Luka. He's a goddamn EuroLeague MVP. But yeah, like Trae Young, those guys, great in college. There's still an adjustment period.
Yeah.
There's still time to figure it out.
Difference with those guys is they get the keys. If they make mistakes, they get to keep playing.
Yeah. We're going to take a really quick break and then come back to talk more about the Doc Shea situation.
We'll just
Will just said they do get the keys, and I feel like Doc has maybe given Shay, like, you can have the keys if I'm in a good mood and you ask
it's
the
like
right way.
He can drive the car, but it has to be back by 4 p.m.
Exactly.
School gets out at 3:30, car's back in the driveway at 4 p.m.
Exactly. Like, you can have, yeah, if you...
He's not cruising.
Yeah, he's not cruising. And there's times when we see other rookie point guards who get to just do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And we're not saying build the offense around Shay in any way. Like, I mean, maybe, depending on
I think to a certain degree, but I think that, you know, the lineup that we have is already very well catered to take care of Shay.
And we're signing, like, 8 new players next season or whatever the hell it is. So I don't... It's just kind of... It's been a little frustrating to watch Doc and Shay's rapport. Or not rapport, but just how Doc is kind of coaching Shay. Because it does seem like he's really hard on him. To Shay's credit, he does seem to bounce back well.
Yeah.
He answered with 17 points after he had kind of a rough game. It's going to be interesting to see what happens against the Lakers after not playing for all the fourth quarter in a game where we kind of needed Shay.
I agree.
That Hawks game. But I hope Doc can kind of figure it out. I'm not necessarily sure if Doc will figure it out, if things are kind of going okay-ish as they are right now.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not sure what forces him to change.
So here's the other thing. He hasn't really ever had a whole lot of reason to change.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Like, he hasn't had really, other than that Magic team and that, I guess, the Clippers kind of last year, you know, where he was forced to tweak lineups and stuff like that.
He literally had to.
Yeah. Why? Yeah. There haven't been, like, extenuating circumstances that have forced him to change at all.
Yeah. The only one was the Avery Bradley injury that put Shay into the starting lineup. And then... Shay, kind of in spite of not starting, was like, I'm clearly good enough that you need to start me.
Yeah.
Like, it's clear that that needs to happen. And Doc has taken more chances with Motley and Jerome kind of than I thought he was going to, especially recently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost, I mean, I think it's almost the expectation because, you know, we traded for Shay, essentially. That pick turned into Shay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's some added expectation maybe in Doc's head of where Shay should be at.
Definitely.
Because Doc isn't the GM anymore.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he obviously has input on players and stuff like that. I don't think he's frozen out or anything like that. But I just
Lee Jenkins, he's blocking out the
floor. I just think maybe Doc has a much higher expectation of Shay than we do, which, I mean, makes total sense. He sees him 82 nights a week.
Yeah.
So I'm just hoping he can. I'm hoping, because this is also the come to Jesus moment, I guess, if you will, for Shay too. Of, are you going to let Doc, who is one of the most respected coaches and rightfully so in the league?
Oh yeah.
Are you going to let him motivate you, or is his boisterous yelling, arm waving, benching you for a quarter, or is that going to make you go into a hole?
Definitely.
So it's not all on Doc.
I want to make that clear for sure.
And Shay has bounced back well. It's going to be interesting to see how Shay responds and really kind of how the rhetoric we hear from the off season and what everyone has to say, especially Doc, at the end of this season about Shay's play.
Yeah. I've got one last thing if we're like concluding this has the game passed Doc by. So I have one a little bit of a disturbing stat. Let me bring it up here real fast. Okay, so...
Did you say disturbing?
Disturbing, yeah.
Oh, God.
So, in 18 seasons that Doc has coached, he's only missed the playoffs 4 times.
One of them was last year.
Yeah.
With a hobbled squad.
Yeah, definitely. But, this is the disturbing stat. He's been bounced in the first round 7 times.
That makes sense.
And I think that, especially when you have personnel like the Lob City era,
yeah,
like the Celtics had there.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, like the Magic had with McGrady.
Yeah.
I think that says something.
Hmm.
I think that says something to your adaptability.
You're saying he needs a big three.
I think so.
Than another coach.
I think so.
I'm not going to argue with that.
So in conclusion...
Oh, I like that take, yeah.
I don't think that the game has passed Doc by as a coach. I think as a manager of personalities, perhaps.
Perhaps it has, with the crop of these damn millennials and their dang phones. That's kind of what it feels like sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like clearly the old guard versus the new guard. How would you grade how he's dealt with Shay so far?
C.
C? I was going to give a B-.
I would say perfectly average.
Perfectly average.
I think could be better, but I mean, it also on the flip side could be much worse.
It could be a lot worse. That was a great question. Thank you for that. We're getting into it. We might only do two segments today. Right now, we're going to get into what could have been Wednesday. This one was sent to us from a Twitter user at Chenny John. He sent us like 15.
Oh, wow. That's great.
He sent a ton of them. Shout out Chenny John. This one is, what if the Donald Sterling recording never happened? We're going to get to that right after this quick break. So the Donald Sterling thing, it went down in 2014.
Yeah. Set the scene.
We'll set the stage. It's 2014. You wake up to a bright LA day. No, I'm just kidding.
It's beautiful.
So Donald Sterling was recorded saying heinous, racist things to his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Girlfriend. Sponsors were leaving the Clippers. Like, things were going really bad. It was kind of insane. Like,
he was
gone mentally. He said things in interviews like he prayed for Magic Johnson to get AIDS.
Yeah.
He said that with Anderson Cooper. A week later, he says he's going to give the team to his wife, Shelly, so she can sell it. 4 days after that, he releases a 26-page document basically saying he should be allowed to keep the team. The next day, he said he's okay with the team being sold. So he is clearly...
And then he ended up being forced by... I mean, this was Adam Silver's first big thing.
First thing. It might have been like his first day on the job, it felt like.
Probably.
Then he's forced to sell the team after these recordings and the racism and the mental instability is brought to light. But none of this insanity happens if his girlfriend doesn't record those phone calls. None of this stuff comes up if those phone calls aren't put out.
I disagree, because I think that the erratic actions of Donald Sterling were pretty well known. But
there was no proof or a reason to oust him, is my thing.
I guess that's true.
Because in 84...
I mean, and this happened, this was so big.
It was nuts.
I would say that this hung over the Clippers, like this, despite having, you know, a number one draft pick.
It was in the middle of Lob City.
And being on the mend, this was bigger than the Clippers.
Yeah, it happened in 2014, and then, the next season is when the collapse against the Rockets. Next season, we lose to the Jazz in the first round, and that's the end of Lob City.
Yeah.
So it kind of marks that, plus the Rockets defeat, kind of marked the beginning of the end of Lob City. But so what do we think happened if this tape just never comes out and they don't have a reason to yank the team from Donald Sterling? I think Lob City's cut even shorter.
I think it's cut even shorter. I don't know if Chris Paul would stay.
Exactly. I think everyone's just like, because also... Blake Griffin has some weird stories about Donald Sterling, like that weird party he took him to where he just kind of like led Blake around and was like, this is my player, and like all that weird stuff. I think DeAndre takes that deal with the Mavs that we convinced them to bail on.
Yeah.
I think we maybe still have Blake.
I'm not sure how active he was in the meddlings of the front office.
Yeah. But so here's the other thing. He's obviously getting more mentally unstable as this time goes on.
Yeah, so I do think that maybe he becomes more vocal and he does become more involved.
He becomes the guy who yelled at Baron Davis so much that Baron Davis like wanted to fight him at games and stuff like that to the nth degree.
Yeah.
I think he maybe treats the team more like a business.
Yeah.
And we do the classic like trading draft picks for bad stars and missing out on things like Kyrie Irving, which was kind of insane because that pick had like a negative percentage of being the number one pick or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think we both agree things would have been worse.
Things would definitely be worse. I actually wonder, I mean, because it was questionable if the Clippers would be able to bounce back from a franchise even after this, after the TMZ thing. I think if he's still there, you know, and he's being so erratic, I think it's one of those things where maybe instead of there being one big incident, people are silently documenting a case.
Yeah. It's like a RICO case of like mental instability and racism.
Yeah. And then it comes out. And I think that that would be enough to like have this team not here anymore.
Moved.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, yeah, I think it becomes an even bigger investigation.
Yeah.
And stuff like that of just like, because I mean, his girlfriend had recordings on deck, it seemed like. I feel like you don't record.
I think you're recording people if they say a bunch of crazy shit.
Exactly.
All the time.
Like, I don't think I've never been like, man, everyone in my life is perfectly normal. I should record them on the phone. I'm like, no, this guy's losing his mind. I'm going to record this a ton. So I think she had a bunch of stuff on deck. And yeah. I think that probably gets added to that investigation. It's just
definitely.
Boom, 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 boom. I mean, we're taking the team back to San Diego or something.
I'm sure there's just worse stuff that players have heard that they kept private.
So much worse stuff. Well, Darius Miles and Quentin Richardson kind of talk about it a little bit. And that Fantastic Players Tribune piece about how like they'd be showering and Donald Sterling would come through and just like kind of like watch them like
he would come in with a gang of dudes all in fur coats and say stuff like those are my boys look at my beautiful boys.
Oh god damn, it's just slimy. Like it just I feel so like there's a film all over us when we're talking about this. But it is definitely a trip because like I mean I was a Clippers fan when we moved to LA when Vinny Del Negro was coaching the team and
yeah.
I mean, I didn't know a lot about Donald Sterling.
I wasn't, I mean...
Until the TMZ stuff came out.
Yeah, I wasn't super familiar. I guess I had heard things, like little things, I guess, because of probably the Baron Davis stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I remember that was the first thing I heard of, like, wow. And then I looked and I was like, oh, this dude's a racist.
Yeah.
Documentedly, legally defined. Like,
yeah, yeah.
In a court of law, discriminated against people based on their race. Horrible guy.
Horrible guy. Also, I want to say a big shout out to Ballmer, who super overpaid for this team. Yeah, so, like, I get he was forced to sell, and naturally, like, the bids were coming in, and they were stuff like, you know, 1.2, 1.5 would have been the going thing. And because of him failing to get an NBA organization earlier,
mm-hmm.
He was like, you know, these opportunities don't come up very often.
Yeah.
I'll give you $2 billion, like, I'll send the check right now to get this done. And I love Ballmer as an owner.
He actually sent a cashier's check. Western Union had to break it up into 53 different amounts.
I like Ballmer actually a lot as an owner. I don't love that he wants to like move the team because I kind of like Staples Center.
We like Staples Center.
But I do like that he is not involved. He's interested.
But not involved.
He's not overplaying
his
hand.
That's the perfect yay. I would say, here's my spicy take of the day, top three owner in the league.
Oh, no question.
Top three owner in the league. That about wraps it up for us.
Yeah, we got a little long-winded on the doc thing, but there was a
lot. Yeah, thanks for tuning in, guys. We're going to have a super big preview for the Lakers game tomorrow. Sorry we didn't get to the mini one today. LeBron will not be playing. I guess that's our one preview right now.
Yeah, and Kuz and Hart are questionable.
Might be missing their best three players. I'll
Who
take
knows?
It. Thank you guys so much for listening to us hang out on this front porch, drink lemonade, and shoot the breeze about the Clippers. We are here Monday through Friday. Please rate and subscribe us on iTunes.
Yeah, it does a lot. It goes a long way.
We really appreciate it. Say something funny in the review. We'll talk about on the show. Come out to Crawford's tomorrow night. I have been Positive Chuck Mockler.
And I'm William the Opinion Updike. Thanks for tuning in.